welcome to the latest edition of Derek Gervin's As Good As It Gets Basketball Podcast. This is Ricky Hampton, editor and founder of the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com website, and I'd love to introduce the host of this show, the one and only Mr. Derek Gervin, former University of Texas San Antonio collegiate star and NBA veteran. Derek.
I have a gentleman on here that I think very highly of, former NBA player, 17-year NBA veteran from the University of Tennessee, and I want to welcome Dale Ellis. How you doing, Mr. Ellis?
I'm doing good, Derek. Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure. Dale, I have my partner on here as well, Ricky. Say hello to familiarize yourself with Mr. Ellis, please.
Oh, man, I'm very familiar with you, Dale. Ricky Hampton, I actually covered you some when you were down in Knoxville. I worked in Nashville at the Nashville Banner. So I got to see you come to Nashville and rock the Commodores and do your thing down in Knoxville, man. But it is an honor and pleasure to have you on Derek Gervin's As Good As It Gets Basketball Podcast.
I really appreciate that, man. Tennessee is doing very well. They had a tight game with Vanderbilt already this year. I think they have to go head-to-head this weekend. I believe they're getting ready to play them again. So I'm excited about what's going on in Knoxville and excited to be on your show as well.
Thanks.
Yeah, you know, that has always been a good rivalry, Vandy, Tennessee in basketball. And even this year, Vandy's struggling, but they took Tennessee to basketball. That's one of those rivalry games where – you always hear about the records don't matter when rivals play, and it's truly the case with the Vols. But, Dale, I remember you at UT, man, and you were a low-post terror and a highly efficient player. And then you get to the NBA and become a marksman, one of the first sharpshooters from behind the line. Can you talk to us about that transformation in your game? Or did you always have that?
Yeah, I was drafted as a small forward. I was ninth pick in the draft overall. There was no lottery at the time, but there was no 3-point line in college or high school when I was coming up. The 3-point line, they were just using that in the NBA. It was just something new. They were using it at the end of the game or end of the half, go in the locker room up by one or two points, something like that. But as the game has evolved, where they're shooting that 3-point shot throughout the game, so. As a high school player and a college player, I was asked to play the post position. I enjoyed playing the game. I would have played any position coach asked me to play. I just wanted to be on the floor. But my dream was to play NBA basketball. I knew I wasn't going to be able to play low post on a professional level. So in the off season, I would work on shooting the ball from the perimeter. You couldn't catch me posting up.
Dale. What made Don DeVoe? Because you guys, when you practice every day, and I've seen you play out throughout your career, and I even saw you when you played on the low post. I'm just trying to figure out every day you guys were practicing. What did it take? At what point did your coach realize what kind of range you had?
Well, they never did. I mean, if you saw me in a pickup game during the offseason, you knew that I could shoot the ball from the perimeter. So Don DeVoe, you know, he barely saw that. I didn't pay any attention to it because that was more valuable playing in the post. Because of my size, I had to catch the ball and shoot it real fast. I developed a jump hook to get it over centers. I played against guys like Rap Sampson and 47-footers, so you had to get the ball off fast. But, you know, I got drafted as a low-post player, and Dick Motta noticed that I was able to shoot it from the perimeter. The NBA had no clue that I could shoot it because they didn't see me ever doing it. But, you know, Dick Motta, my first coach in Dallas, watched me play one-on-one with Derek, who came in as a rookie, Derek Harper, and watched us play one-on-one and saw some of the stuff that I was doing and noticed that I had shooting range. So he was trying to find a spot for me to get playing time. So I became pretty much a swing player. I was considered a tweener, in between a two guard and a small forward. So I was one of those guys which rarely makes it.
Well, I got a text message question for you, Dale. let me see here. What was the overall temperament of the Mavs with all the talent you guys had in the early years?
We had some awesome talent. You had Mark Aguirre, Dave Vincent. You had Sam Perkins come in, Dallas Trent. They had a ton of draft picks. Passed up on Joe Dumars, passed up on Karl Malone, brought in Bill Winnington and Kuvay Blob. And, you know, the team was developing, getting better and better every year. There was no pressure on us to win basketball games because we were pretty much a new franchise, just up and coming. So the guys played well together. Dick Mauer did an excellent job of getting us there. He's one of the best coaches. He was one of the best coaches in the league as far as X and O's. Made you feel comfortable towards the end of the game that if it was close, he could call a play and get us a good look and good opportunity to win. So we just played with a lot of enthusiasm and played to win. We were excited. We were a bunch of young players.
How did you keep your positive attitude, Dell? Because coming out of college, you were first in 82, you were second team All-American. Then you become a consensus All-American. So I know you got used to being the man. And then you go into Dallas. How was the adjustment? Was it a hard adjustment for you, being on the bench, averaging 7 points a game?
It was a big adjustment, you know. As a rookie coming in, you think you're going to get into the NBA and make an instant impact. And I was one of those guys, too. I was a star player in high school, star player in college. I just felt in my heart that I was going to turn that team around and make a winner out of it. But, you know, I didn't get the opportunity I wanted. I just tried to stay patient, keep working on my game. You look at the NBA and some of the guys that are sitting on the bench today, they can play. These guys can play. Sometimes you lose confidence in your ability to play. Coaches will make you feel like you're not good enough to get it done, but they're not getting the opportunity or the minutes. So I use practice as my play time for me. If you walked into a practice situation, a practice session, and you didn't know any other players, you would think I was one of the star players. So if you're on a team with me and we're going to practice and you're not practicing hard, I was going to make you look bad every single day. I made guys practice hard. So that was my time to work on my game because I wasn't getting the minutes during the game situations. But I tried to stay patient. It was difficult. And after 3 years, I just pretty much demanded a trade. I wanted out. I wanted to play for a team. I wanted to get an opportunity to really show what I could do. So I was fortunate that I landed in Seattle.
I was going to say, you certainly did that when you got to Seattle, man. You guys had some really outstanding teams there. And the thing I always admire about your game, even from watching in college to professional level, number one, you were always a professional. I mean, you always seem to honor the game and the way you play with your effort. And you were a cerebral player, too. And I guess you had to be, especially in college, you had to be clever with the ball and all that because you were playing against bigger guys. Who taught you the professionalism and being a thoughtful player?
I was fortunate that I played for some good coaches. And then I had great teammates. And I tried to take anything that my teammates were doing well and try to apply it to my game. I still do that today. If I'm around someone that's doing something really positive, I try to apply that to me as well. You can practice doing that and be successful. I got in, I saw Steve Ray and Gary Carter in college, and I knew I had to really work to be just as good as they did. You know, and I had clutch players like Reggie Johnson and Howard Wood. So I was really focusing on coming up with something that I could do consistently to make shots, be clutch, make game winners, you know. I didn't feel comfortable in the game situation. I didn't have the ball in my hand. I wanted to take that big shot. So I was going to go for it. I really wanted to play NBA basketball. So it's just about staying patient, keep working at it. And when that opportunity comes along, you got to take full advantage of it.
How was it, Dale? I got to ask you this. You get to Seattle, okay? You come from a team, and the reason I really had you on the show, I can tell you clearly. Ricky and myself, we talk, you know, I deal with a lot of kids. And we talk about being patient, you know, being able to sustain until you get in the right situation. And a lot of times people give up on themselves when things don't go their way right from the beginning. the reason I wanted you on here because you were in Dallas for a 4-year period, and I know it couldn't have really been easy for you, but you continue to work on your game, and as you're doing that, you got other teams that are interested in you. And I always talk about the importance of just being liked by one team. When you get to Seattle, man, it had to be like a breath of fresh air. You get there, and I'm sure George Carl and the guys welcome you with open arms. Tell us how easy it was for you. You made the transition from averaging 7 points a game in Dallas. You get to Seattle. Now you're putting up 25 points a game, and you win the most improved player. This all happens quickly. What kind of feeling was that for you?
That was awesome. You know, I had the biggest increase in points from 1 year to the next in NBA history. I don't know if anybody would break that record. I've had 3.2 records. Those records are made to be broken. But I was first in the game to score 1,000 three-pointers. You can't break that record. But that was awesome. It's just that I was patient. I kept waiting, kept working, and I seized the moment. Lenny Wilkins was the general manager in Seattle. Took a chance on me, traded Al Woods to Seattle for me. And Bernie Bickerstaff actually was the head coach at that time. And they were rebuilding. So you had about 8 new players on that team. So we were picked that year to come in dead last. We weren't expected to do anything, so there was no pressure on us. After a few games in the regular season, Coach threw me in the lineup with Nate McMillan and told me to go for it. You know, he took me out of the game for throwing, making a couple turnovers, and said, "Look, you're here to shoot the ball." But I don't believe that he knew that I had that range either. But he gave me the confidence. He said, "You're here to shoot. If you insist on passing, you can sit down with me." No, I sat out for 3 years. I'm ready to play basketball. So he gave me the green light with all the guys. The guys expecting that when I catch the ball and put it in the air. So we jailed midseason and squeaked into the playoffs, and we ended up in the Western Conference Finals. So, and when you're winning basketball games, it gives you the confidence that you can actually get this thing done, that you are really a professional. So it created a wonderful atmosphere for us.
Well,
yeah,
Ricky, let me get this in because I'm thinking about Dell and the year you averaged 25. And, you know, Ricky and I are both from Detroit. So I was a fan of yours. And then you go on 2 years later, and we have a legend in Detroit by the name of Spencer Haywood. You go on in 1988 and 89, the 89 season, you break Spencer's record of scoring for one season, 2,253 points. And you held that record for quite a while until this guy that's playing right now, Kevin Durant. When you were playing in Seattle, did you ever see them leaving the city of Seattle?
No, I think you know, at some point there will be a team back in Seattle. We had a great fan base. They really missed the Sonics being there. No one saw that coming. It was an awful situation. The team ended up in Oklahoma. But, you know, in the next couple of years, 2-3 years, I believe there'll be a team back in Seattle. It was just an awesome era of basketball. They won an NBA championship in 79. I came out of high school in 79. I remember watching those guys. So I was a Sonic fan at that point. I was also a Julius Erving fan, you know, so I love watching Julius play. I was happy to see him win a championship in Philadelphia. And your father, George, had the opportunity to play for George in San Antonio, man. That was awesome. George was my assistant coach, and George would help me a little bit with my shot when I was missing shots. When I got in the zone where I was the score, the way I wanted to score, I started trying to drill it into the basket instead of shoot it up and over, let it fall. And I had a habit of doing that. So George was able to work with me a little bit with that. I watched George get behind the backboard and finger roll over the top of the backboard. I said, "George, do that again." Do that again. And finger rolling over the top of the backboard again, you know, but a lot of these guys I grew up watching that I admired, and to get on the court with them and be able to – you grow up on the playground trying to pretend like you're these particular players, you know, don't want to dunk like Julius or finger roll this ball like a George Gervin. and then get in front of them and get a chance to compete against them, man. It was nerve-wracking, but after a while of playing NBA basketball, you start to compete hard with them. You want to show them what you're capable of doing. So we all have mutual respect for one another.
You actually made my day because he's even my brother. You know, I played against you. His son is actually about 40, but it made my day. Oh, it's all good. You made my son. So I thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry, Derek. I tell you, sorry.
All right. Go ahead, Ricky.
Hey. Well, we got a caller on the line who would love to ask you a question, Dale. I'm going to bring him in. You're on with Dale Ellis on Derek Gervin's As Good As It Gets basketball podcast.
Hi, Dale. This is Chico. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you.
You probably don't even remember me, but I wanted to ask you a question. In your early years, did you run into somebody who particularly brought it to you and made you want to up your game to the point that that wouldn't happen anymore, especially in your early years, be it college, high school, or your early days at Dallas?
Not really. I had my attitude was I'm not really competing against anybody. I enjoyed competing against being on the floor with Michael Jordan. That was exciting. It was easy to get up for games like that. Having played the Lakers and being defended by who I thought was the best defender, it was Michael Cooper. But I didn't really look at it like that. I looked at it as if I put this work in, I'd give it my all every single day. I'm prepared. Now I'm trying to see if I can actually bring it to the floor. So I'm competing against myself. I'm not competing against anybody else. It's always nerve-wracking a little bit. I had butterflies. But when you play this game for so long, you understand that those butterflies are not being – that's not nervousness. That's just nervous excitement. Excitement about what's getting ready to take place. So you're just trying to see if you can bring it. And it just takes putting it in practice. If you can get it done on the practice floor, you can get it done in game situations. So I practice hard every day. And in my later years, I was playing NBA football, I'd go to the gym early and get shots up before the guys got there. And I was asked, coaches would ask me to stick around afterwards so some of the guys could see my work at it, you know. So you got to do extra stuff. I've been doing extra stuff since I was a kid. I would play until no one wanted to play anymore. So much I love the game of basketball.
Well, thank you for having me on, Ricky. I just wanted to say hi to Dale. Dale, you may not remember, we went to a fight years ago to see Pernell Whitaker and Cesar Chavez here in San Antonio. Hello, Derek. How are you doing as well? I'm Alan's brother, man. You don't remember?
Chico. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. That was great time.
I enjoy your show, Derek. I enjoy your show, brother. Thank you, Ricky.
Chico, I want to tell you, thank you for calling in. I knew who you were. I wrote my partner as you were on the show talking about the defense. Dale, I know you remember you played against Alvin. And, you know, me being here in San Antonio, I played against Alvin pretty much every summer. What did you think about playing against the guys? You played against Michael Cooper and Alvin Robertson. Did that contribute to you becoming a better ball player, learning how to protect the ball a little more? But they don't protect the ball. Yeah, these guys dribble kind of high today.
Yes. With a guy like Alvin, he has such good hands. He's a great defender. You got to create space. You know, basketball is just spacing. If you can create space, you can get your shot off. It was always difficult with guys like Michael Cooper and Alvin to create that space. So I developed this bump and run. So what I try to do is establish contact with those guys before, instead of just running to a spot, establish contact with them first, knock them off balance, and then run and catch a basketball. But Alvin had great hands. And then back then, it was really difficult because you could hand check. And with a guy like Alvin, it made the game really difficult to play.
Thank you, Chico.
Thank you, Chico.
All right.
Have a good day, my man.
Hey, Dale, you know what? It is so funny you mentioned that. I had a conversation with Coach Ray Scott yesterday. I was talking to Coach Ray Scott, former coach of the Detroit Pistons, and in fact, the first black to win the NBA Coach of the Year in 1974, Coach Scott. won the NBA Coach of the Year. And he talked about how basketball is a game played, the physicality of the game. To bump a guy, you give him a little bump to get where you're going. And that gives you the space you need. And he's talking about how fast all this happens. Is that what you're speaking of when you talked about the bump that you would give a guy?
Yes, man, if you're playing with a guy like Alvin, and Alvin probably was the toughest defensive user in his hands. You really had no choice but to have some contact, create contact with him. Yeah, this game is physical. I missed that part of the game, the physical play. I missed the post play, too. It's a game of a bunch of shooters now, so I miss watching guys play down low, playing physical basketball, but... You got guys like Allen with great hands like that. Now, there's nothing that you can do. He's going to defend you, and once he puts his hand on you, it's over with. He can control your movements. It's not like I'm going to go right. You can't make up your mind, I'm going to go right, I'm going to go left. That's a scouting report that he's going by. He knows what your strengths are. If he knows you're going right 90% of the time, he's on your right. He's on your right side. He's going to make you go left. So it was fun. I played with Alvin in Milwaukee. I got a chance to know Alvin in San Antonio. And Alvin and I still communicate. Actually, we had a conversation last week. Alvin is one of the guys that will pick up the phone real fast. And we laugh and play and talk basketball sometimes. But I miss being around the brother. He's a good brother. Strong, too, man. Just strong as an ox. Don't look it, but such good hands and knows how to use his body.
Dale, did you ever think about, because you know you still got that low post game in your back pocket. With these three-on-three leagues that are going on in the summer, you ever thought about just coming out and schooling some of these kids in the post?
No, look,
some of these mothers in the post.
When they first came out with the three-on-three, I called Gary Payton. Gary was involved with the initial startup with Ice Cube, from my understanding. So I called Gary. And Gary had and I had done some stuff overseas after we retired, some exhibition games. And he said, I was calling him about the opportunity of doing some coaching. He said, he didn't know that. He said, you want to play? And I said, no. I'm not calling you about playing. I don't think I can do that one anymore. I can stand on the court all day long and still shoot the life out of it, but the physicality that they're playing with, they don't play with NBA rules, I don't believe, with the hand checking, they able to do a little bit more. So it's been exciting to watch those guys play it, but no, I don't believe I can go at that level anymore.
Dale, I got to switch the subject a little bit to this new era, because a lot of people don't know, and I want them to know. You were a 1989 three-point champion. So tell me what you think about the evolution of the game today, how from our days, you know, you rarely shot the three, and then today you're expected to shoot the layup or the three. What do you think about how the game has evolved and how important the three-point has become?
The three-point shot is huge in the game now. It's huge, and you would expect, if you had to bet your money, I'd bet that Golden State would be in the finals again this year, competing for a championship and probably walk away with it once again. I don't see them losing. They're building a dynasty. But the guys that they have that can shoot from the perimeter, it doesn't really matter if they get down 20 at half. They have the ability just to score points in bunches real fast to let those guys get hot. So if you try to compete with those guys on a shooting level, you're making a mistake. You got to punch that ball inside and play a little bit more physical with a team like that. They can actually shoot the ball from the perimeter. But the game is a little different now. It's fun to watch those guys play it. I don't watch much regular season basketball. I really enjoy the playoffs when they call the game a little closer and they actually let them play a little bit more physical. But, the game has completely changed. I've missed the post game. I've missed watching the Lakers and the Celtics compete for championships. They were fun to watch. Chicago winning championships. I was glued to the television. during that time of year if I wasn't in the playoffs, but I enjoyed watching. But regular season basketball wasn't much of an interest to me. I'd rather watch a good movie than watch, you know. Okay.
I'm just saying.
Hey, Dale, the 97-98 Supersonics, a really great team. I think you guys won 61 games. Gary Payton was on that team. You were back in Seattle then, and still, the amazing thing about you, you know, you played, what, 17 years?
Yes.
And was still a productive player. I mean, how do you last in the NBA that long? I know professionalism has a lot to do with it. And talk to us about the 97-98 Supersonics, a really great team, 61 wins. You couldn't get past the Lakers, I believe, in the finals. But talk about that team in the West Finals.
I wasn't actually on that team. I came back the following year. I watched them compete, and I would love to have been on that team playing with those guys. You had Gary, Sean, and Nate. Those guys I played with in Seattle. I saw Sean come in as a rookie, and I left midseason. Didn't get a chance to finish a full season with him, but I played with Gary and Nate. And then you have Sam Perkins and Detlef Schrempf. I played with those guys in Dallas. So I was familiar with those guys. I had an opportunity to come back to Atlanta and play. This is my home. This is where I grew up. I passed up that opportunity to go back to Seattle. Took less money to play for a team. I thought I had a chance to get back to the finals. And I wasn't able to reproduce it. Wasn't able to reproduce it that following year. So it was a little disappointing to me. And so I spent two more years in Seattle and moved on again. But George Karl did an excellent job. He's a great, excellent coach. I love how the way he structured his practices and how he called his plays and got guys involved. It was fun to play with. And it was good to be back in Seattle, back home, because I kept my home in Seattle when I played for other teams. So I decided to go back home and play basketball. I thought I'd finished my career there and continue to live in Seattle. I didn't know I was going to end up back here in Atlanta, but it's just how things go. But, yeah, it would have been fun to play for that championship. We grew up on the playgrounds. That's all we think about is opportunities to compete for a championship. I had things in my game a little bit that I didn't display. I was one of those guys that did exactly what the coaches asked me to do. So that's the time when you got to lift your game to another level. You get to the finals, lift your game to another level, show these guys something different that you can do, you know, with the ball. You got a little bit more freedom to go play basketball in those situations. So I never got there, but it was always fun to sit back and watch those guys compete for those championships.
And your longevity, your ability to play 17 years, what do you think was the key to that?
Just taking care of my body, eating right, you know, trying to rest. It was always difficult to get rest for games, especially getting ready to play a team that's like the Lakers, you know, especially when Chicago's coming in town. It's always difficult. You know, you're in the locker room, day before a game, the guys all they talking about, Black Jesus is going to be here tomorrow, Dale. What you going to do? What is he gonna do? Hell, he got to guard me too, you know. So it was always exciting. Those are times it was a little nerve wracking as far as trying to get some sleep because you're so hyped, can't wait for the game. I knew it was gonna be exciting because all eyes on me, and that's what you want as a ball player. You want people to notice your talent. So I knew all eyes was gonna be on me. The arena was gonna be packed, and you have no choice but watch what I'm doing because I'm right in front of Michael Jordan. Yeah, you know, he's right in front of me. So those are fun games to play. So take care of your body, eat correct, you know, exercise, and continue to work your game. In the later years, what I did was put in extra work. You got to put the extra work in to be able to sustain. You got Crawford. Crawford's playing ball right now. He's in his – Crawford is – I don't know if
he's 40. I think he's 40.
Right, and that's when I retired. I was 41 when I walked, done with the game of basketball. I actually had another year left on the contract and decided to walk away from the game. I was a little tired of traveling, and I wanted to spend that last year with my daughter that was going off to college to work with tennis. Now, I love tennis because it's an individual sport, but I don't want to get her to understand how you compete mentally through sports. And I wanted to spend a year doing that with her, so I walked away from the game. I had some regrets afterwards, after about 6 months at home, doing nothing but that. But it was worthwhile. Because you miss the game. You know, you end up missing the game. Every time I step into an arena, even today, I kind of miss it a little bit. I want to get out there and shoot it one time. But
and probably make it, too.
Hey, Ricky, you're a modest guy, so... You brought up the 1,000 three-pointers, but I'm going to bring up something else that people probably aren't aware of. You're the first guy in NBA history, four-point plays against Sacramento in 88. And then you also played in a game against the Milwaukee Bucks, and you played 69 minutes. That's a record that might not ever be broken. How difficult was that to play in a game with five overtimes and you playing 69 out of 73 minutes?
That was a fun game, man. It was like running mud there towards the end. I got the ball right there at half court, and I had a wide-open layup. No one's in front of me. And guess who ran me down and blocked the shot from behind? Alvin Robinson. Of course, that was exciting. That was an exciting game. That was fun to play in a game like that. Every shot's a big shot. It's like playing college basketball or playing pickup basketball. When you rush to the gym, you can't lose. If you lose, you might sit down for a few games.
Right.
You don't want to sit. Every play was a huge play. But the most difficult thing about all that, that the very next night we had to play Chicago, and I'm trying to get some rest.
Oh, man.
I got to play against Michael in Chicago. Unbelievable. But,
wow. Hey, Dale, we got a text question here. Talk to us about another great player from your era, Mark Aguirre, and Rolando Blackman.
Okay, they were fun to play with. Those guys could put up numbers. If you ISO'd Rolando, you know he's going to give you 2 points. He's going to get to the hole, get fired, get to the line, and he's going to knock down free throws. It was fun watching him. I enjoyed practicing against both of those guys. Mark was one of those guys that could turn it on and off anytime he wanted to. I would love to have seen him be consistent with bringing it every single night. I remember once he was left off the All-Star team. Rolando made the All-Star team. He had come into his own, and so had Mark. Mark was playing great basketball, but he was left off, and he was not too happy with that. He wasn't happy at all. So we were playing Philadelphia at home when they made the announcement who was going to be on the All-Star team. And when they announced Mark's name, he got up off the bench, walked down to their bench, and said, they left me off the All-Star team. I'm going to give y'all 50 tonight. And he went out and scored 50 points. Wow, I mean, you just have that attitude somehow. What you have to do is find ways to get excited about the game every single night. It's difficult. You're playing 90 games, 100 games, whatever. I can shoot exhibition games and playoffs.
Yeah.
It's hard to get up for games every single night. So you have to find ways to trick yourself to get excited. So that's what he did. And what I tried to do is every single time I felt like staying on the couch. I don't really want to go to the gym tonight. Find ways to get excited about it. But I played for some great fans. So as soon as you walk into the arena, the excitement just hits you. You're ready to go because you want to show your game.
And you know, Dale, one of the things about Mark, I had a chance to cover him here in Detroit when he joined the Pistons. He came to town, and everybody was saying, "Man, this guy has a bad." Well, that was the reputation, that he was a bad attitude and all that. He was a great teammate in Detroit, and you know, he was never an attitude problem or anything. And in fact, he kind of deferred. here until Isaiah said, hey, we didn't bring you here for you to step back. We brought you here to step up. And I'm, you know, maybe it wasn't a problem here because there was so many established players. But he played great in Detroit and was part of those championship team here.
That's right. They had those runs where they were winning championships, and Mark was fortunate to be able to play for that team. And he was playing with all veterans that's been there and knows what it takes to get it done. So he had no. When you're playing a situation like that, you have no choice but to come with it every single night. You don't want to sit down there and watch, sit on that bench and watch those guys compete. You want to get involved. So he was forced with the. That situation was put right there in front of him. So I know he had to come with it every night. But that was it had to be a great experience for him. You know, he and Isaiah were best friends, great friends, and we get a chance to play with a team that can win. So,
yeah.
You know, I was happy for Mark that he got that opportunity.
Yeah. Hey, what is it about players? They come into the league with these tremendous reputations in college, and they just don't pan out. I mean, and you know the talent is there. You can see. This guy can play. Nonetheless, he's not being a productive guy. How does that happen?
I really don't know. I really can't put a finger on that. Yeah, I don't know if these guys lose, you know, they just stop believing in their ability to play. Coaches can make you feel that too, you know. You got to find ways to fight against that. Then again, you got to find ways to get excited. And you got to continue to develop. You just don't come into the NBA and think that you're just going to make that instant impact with the game that you have in college. You have to continue to improve on a consistent basis, keep developing your game. You watch guys like Michael. Michael came into the league. He had a quick first step. So you had to give him some space to play basketball because that step, with that first step, he can get around you. So you gave him the space and invited him to take a jump shot. And then, you know, after a year or so, you know, now you got to play him honestly because he's working on his jump shot. He's able to make it from the perimeter, too. You got to play him honest. So now you got to play him to angles, force him to where help is. You know what I'm saying? Use the baseline and the sideline to help guard Michael. Keep him out in the middle of the floor. And then he developed a fadeaway shot, you know, the one Kobe was emulating what Michael was doing. He can shoot it fading away from the basket. How do you defend something like that? You can't block it. So you continue to work on your game, so guys got to do that. I think that is part of it, and part of it is being in the right system.
Thank you, Dale. Dale, I want to bring this up to you, and I'm sorry. The reason that you're talking about the system, I had this conversation a few days ago with Ricky, and I had one of your former teammates on the show a few days ago, actually, Steve Henson.
Uh-huh.
And, you know,
okay.
Steve Henson is currently the coach out here at University of Texas, San Antonio.
Right.
So we talked about you this morning. But back to this, we had this conversation. I told Ricky, sometime a player is similar to at Tennessee. It's the system.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes coaches don't give you the freedom that you deserve. It's kind of like you have to work your way into it. You know, sometimes, you know, the coach's job, they have to keep their job. So sometimes they don't have time to wait on you to see your game developed, and they don't give you the opportunity because you have veterans in front of you. So, you know, I think that's a lot of situations that sometimes you're just not given the opportunity to shine. And then you go to another program, like when you left Dallas and you get to Seattle. Bernie Bickerstaff believed in you. And he gave you an opportunity to show your best. So do you think that has anything to do with it? A lot of times it's the system that can hold a guy back. Do you really believe that?
Absolutely. You got guys that's playing this game right now never get to show you what they could have done because of the system that they're playing with or the coach they're playing for. You know, I thought in high school and college there would be no more favoritism. But you'd have that as well, you know. You got high school seniors and you're a freshman, and you're playing on the same level as a senior, but it's his turn to play. You got to wait. You know, it was one of those deals. When I got into Dallas, I looked at it just like that. It's just like high school and college. These guys are favorites. It's their turn to play. So he's going to sit me down for some period of time. And you stop developing. You can't develop on sitting on that bench. You can't develop into anything. It takes minutes on the court and developing confidence, and coaches will steal your confidence sometimes. So, again, what I would do is because you'll start doubting your ability to play the game because you believe in this. Because you're playing against the best players in the world. You know, you're on the top level of basketball. You'll start doubting your ability. So that feeling started to creep into me, and all it did was drive me. I had to rush, get that out of my head real fast. So that practice, I look forward to it every single day. I can't wait to get to practice, you know, because I got to work on my game. So I just use that time to keep developing and stay patient.
Wow, Dale, I tell you, man, this has been an incredible conversation, man, to hear your thoughts on what helped you become such a productive and successful basketball player throughout your career. I mean, from high school on to college, on to the National Basketball Association. And I'm still waiting for you to get out there in the Ice Cube League, man. I still think you got it in you.
No, they came to Atlanta this year. I was able to see them up close and personal, watch the games. I love what Mark Moody's doing. Mark Moody, I got a chance to play with him. Yeah, I played with Mark Moody in Denver. And he still shoots the lights out of the basketball. He's one of those guys that really takes care of his body. His work ethic was always unbelievable. He was the only guy.
We had Mark Moody on the show. Not only a great basketball player, just a great man. And it was really just a treat to talk to you, man. It was such a treat to have him on the air, too. Hey, is there anybody that you enjoy watching today? I know you don't watch a lot, but.
Yeah, I like watching the Warriors play. I was a shooter. I picture myself running up and down the court with those guys all the time. The game would have been so easy for me. I'm shooting wide open shots all night long. There's no Alvin Robinson on the floor. There's no hand checking rules. Oh my God.
I know that's right, man. But Dale, the thing about Dale, I remember him at Tennessee guarding bigger guys, rebounding the basketball. You did more than just score the basketball on the court. You played both ends.
Yeah. In college, I was forced to play against, defend the best offensive player. So, you know, I was happy to get up out of there when Charles Barkley came in. I said, no way you're going to put me on. Charles was in Auburn. I was in Tennessee. I don't see that happening. So, we had our center actually compete against Charles, a bigger and stronger player. But I was asked to do all that on the floor, and it didn't really matter to me. I just wanted to compete, so I did exactly what my coaches asked me to do.
Hey, Ricky, I've got two questions for Dale before we get off this air. And I got to bring up, you know, my city of San Antonio. Tell us a little bit. You played here in 1992 through 94. What was it like being playing with the Admiral and those few of those guys, Willie Anderson and the guys that were the Spurs?
I actually thought that we had an opportunity to win a championship. I took a cut in salary there, too, also, to go play with David. And, you know, I didn't like to move to the Alamo Dome. I think that hurt us a little bit. It was built for arena basketball. And the depth perception for a shooter, it looked like you're shooting it from half court every time. You're shooting it from the three-point line. So that was a big adjustment. But the most wonderful thing about San Antonio were their fans. I mean, those guys love basketball. They made you feel good. You really wanted to come. It was easy to go to the arena and compete because you know those fans were going to be really into the game. So when they won the championship, I was excited for the city of San Antonio. Greg Popovich came in, and my contract was up. and we sat and talked, and I decided to go to Denver. And had I known they were going to bring Duncan in, I would have stayed. And I walked away with some rings playing with those guys. But Duncan is one of those guys that demand attention. So, again, you end up shooting some wide-open shots because you got to had to double-team him. So, you had Avery Johnson. Avery was just fantastic with getting guys involved. He could find you on the floor. All you had to do was run the court. And you had Sean Elliott, who was a slicer, could get to the basket. So he had to play him honest also. But it was Texas Wing, San Antonio, Houston. You know, I've always played great basketball in Texas for some reason. And I think the Rockets thought that I was playing so well against them because they passed me up in the draft. They thought I had some, a chip on my shoulder about that. But it was just something about playing ball in Texas. So I really enjoyed San Antonio. I love the city. Love the people.
Hey, Ricky, this is funny. I want you to hear this. I'm still trying to understand it because you're talking about Texas. Being from Michigan and then being here so long, maybe I'm missing it. But if you remember, Bernard King came here and played Dallas and the Spurs back-to-back. And he had 50-point games back-to-back. So
yeah,
I'm just trying to understand, what is it that brings out that excitement to you guys coming to Texas?
I remember that. I was sitting on the bench when he came to Dallas and scored 50. Now, he's from my alma mater, University of Tennessee. And
yes,
I sat and watched him score. And I had never seen him play live. Never seen him play live. And I'd seen just clips of him. But to watch him play, God, he was fun to watch. I felt bad for Mark because Mark couldn't do anything with him. I'm sitting on the bench just inching to get on the floor just to compete against the man, just to compete. But I ended up sitting there watching and enjoying the game. But, yes, he came and gave us 50 and went down to Dallas, Houston the very next night, I believe, and scored 50.
No, San Antonio.
Yeah.
Yeah, he came here and gave the Spurs 50. I was over there crying behind the bench.
I still think you have one more stop to make with your basketball career, because before it's all said and done, I think you belong in the National Basketball Hall of Fame, and I'm hoping that one day the selection committee will call your name, because when you look at the body of work you have put forward from the University of Tennessee to the NBA, I think you belong there.
I really appreciate that. I'm a nominee and it's the class of 2019. So we'll see what happens this year. But I'm just excited just to be a nominee in the conversation about going into the hall. So I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, I mean, you're one of the first ones to do it. A 40% career field goal shooter from the 3-point line, Derek. I mean, hell, we can use you in Detroit right now, Dale. We
Ricky,
got nobody shooting that clip.
1,700 threes.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
And that would have been a big part of the game at that time.
No, it wasn't like I was shooting 10 a game, you know. This guy's You got guys like Curry and Durant. They might shoot 8 to 10 of them in a game. So that was rare when I shot that many in a game. And they shot it like that when they were forced to put it up like that. But they have the freedom to go play basketball. It's like watching a pickup basketball game. Curry's done a great job with those guys, just letting you go out. But, Derek, I got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
How was it? What's the age difference between you and George, and how was it growing up playing ball, competing? Did you guys play one-on-one at all?
Well, I'm 11 years younger.
Oh.
And, it's actually my coach at the time, my assistant coach in college, his name was Neville Shedd from the movie, the first team, you know, Texas Western, when they beat Kentucky. So when I used to play George one-on-one all the time. We started when I was like 14 years old. So I was a lot like you. I refused to keep getting beat. I didn't care who it was, Michael Jordan, George Gervin. I was a competitor. And some of that might have been my upbringing, maybe from Detroit. But, you know, we had a different mentality. I just was one of those guys who refused to keep getting my butt kicked without making adjustments. So playing against my brother, you know, it taught me the basketball side, how to, you know, take your lumps. And it also taught me how to persevere and just keep fighting. I refused to give up. It was like failure was not an option to me. So, you know, I took my beatings. And then finally when I was about 18, I got my first win. It might have been one of my few wins of all time. but it was something that I'll never forget in my life. And I think it made me a person that, you know, you just keep fighting. And that's what it taught me.
Yeah, George is a great guy, man. George is quick to pick up a phone call from me anytime as well. He's always been there. I asked George once, I said, anybody ever block your finger roll? He said, no. When they get close to it, Dale, what I do is I'll come down with a finger roll. If they jump at it, I'll come down with my elbow right into their chest. Boom.
I'm glad he said chest.
He said, I'm something creative. Hey, face.
Well, can I tell you, God, Dale, it was my nose when I was 14, 15. It wasn't my chest.
Hey, Dale, we got a lot of young people that listen to this show, and Derek is doing some tremendous work with his young people down in San Antonio. What would you talk to a young high school basketball player that dreams of playing this game, maybe even in college?
Well, you got to eat and sleep the game of basketball. You got to love it. You got to love it. You got to find ways to get up for the game. You got to pay attention to details. And you got to understand that there's players around the world with the same dreams. So if you're taking a day off, someone else is moving ahead of you. So you got to go at it every single day. But hit the books. Hit those books. Game Blazer, if you make it to this level, you're going to have something to fall back on. And that education is more important than anything. So knock those books out.
Man, I love you for that. Man, that's all I talk about every day. Mm-hmm. Ricky, we're going to close it down. But, Dale, I have to ask you the last question because looking at the game today, you are a unique player. Do you see any players out there the style that's similar to yours?
Well, if I had to pick a guy right off the rip, I would say Thompson. Thompson at Golden State. The way he runs the floor and find the space for him to be able to catch it and shoot it. I think he tries to do that. You got guys like Curry. What he does is run to spots. And it makes it – but he's such a great ball handler. So he creates a shot. And I believe that later on in his career, what he's going to do is find ways to get open, create the space, and catch him and shoot. That's going to be the big part of his game. And he's going to be able to play for a long, long time.
Hey, Dale. No, go ahead, Dale.
One more question,
Dale. And, man, we appreciate this amazing conversation we're having with you. And I got a ton of more questions, but hopefully we'll get you back at another time. Hey, but a guy, when you mentioned Klay Thompson, I'm like, yeah, I can see that. Can you tell us what made a guy like Riff Hamilton with the ball, with the way he moved without the ball, trying to defend a guy like that, what problems would that present?
Here's problems. Like we mentioned earlier, basketball is not the spacing. That's all it is. You got to create the space to be able to play the game. So moving around the ball is key, especially if you don't want to put the ball on the floor. That was always my second option, putting it on the floor. If I was going to put it on the floor, it was going to be one or two dribbles and pull up and shoot it. But creating the space, that's the easiest way to play basketball. So you had to move without the ball. So whenever you see a man move his head one direction, looking at the ball, you move. You move. So and your movements to catch and shoot is always away from the ball and then to the ball. So your movement is always away and then come and catch it and shoot. So Hamilton did a great job with that. You know, coming off, you know, I set his man up, come off pitch, catch and shoot a mid-range shot. And I had a lot of that in my game. Yeah. So he was fun to watch, too. It was real fun to watch.
Yeah.
Ricky, I'm gonna say this, and then Dale, you're talking about getting open, and you know I'm a trainer, so I don't want to give away too many secrets, but I'm gonna say it because you know everyone scores. I was a scorer as well. Guys, right. I look at you know some guys use their. You're talking about getting separation. Some guys use their forearm, and I always worried about that because sometimes the ref from the angle it might look like a push off. And then you got some guys that'll lean that shoulder into your chest. Which way did you prefer when you played?
I try to put my shoulder right in the chest and hit them as hard as I could. And you know, coaches, I already knew the scout report against me. Get up on him, you know, create, don't let him have any space, make him shoot it. I mean, make him put it down on the floor. And if he puts it down on the floor, make him go left. But even though I enjoy going left, I was better going left than right. So, but I didn't put the ball down on the floor as much. I wasn't like a Michael Jordan trying to create my own shot, you know, like that. But I stayed within the structure of the game. But I try to hit them as hard with my shoulders. And when I knew guys were really focusing on getting over a pick, so I was able to create the space in that way by knocking them off balance.
Shoulder into the shoulder plexus. Man, you made my day. My man, so I know
you're listening to. You are listening to a master scorer. You just got a lesson from a master scorer. So our young listeners, I hope you take that out and take in the work ethic that this young man put into the game. And most importantly, even beyond that, is the academic responsibilities that come with being a student athlete. Well, Dale, we're going to let you get out of here, man. We hope you'll come back down the road for sure. Hopefully when you're going into the Hall of Fame, because you definitely deserve that spot.
I really appreciate that. And I enjoyed the show, guys. Thanks for having me on. Anytime. Reach out to me.
Thank you, Dale. I'm hoping I can get you back with Alvin at the same time. So we'll talk again. I appreciate you, Dale. I love you, man. And thank you very much for taking the time out, my man.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dale. Thanks to our listeners, audience. Thanks for tuning in to Derek Gervin's As Good As It Gets Basketball podcast. For Ricky Hampton, Derek Gervin, and Dale Ellis, we'll see you next time.